cliffcentral.com.
All right, physical, it's Dua Lipa, cliffcentral.com, Tuesday, and we are live from various locations all around South Africa, bringing you hopefully something entertaining, some informative and inspiring and empowering content as you start your day. I do hate that word content because people are using it for everything, but you know what I mean. All right, so if you and your business need any help with what you'd call emergency communications or any of that stuff around this time, we could probably help you. If you are in the business of communicating with your staff and, you know, that's become a little difficult with COVID-19, you must maybe consider podcasting. It's a great way to talk to people. It's a great way to have explanations and ideas put out there. And if you need help with that, then obviously we're the best at that. So get hold of us. It's the way to do it. And you can do that by just emailing contact or sales at cliffcentral.com. Contact at cliffcentral.com. Tell us what you need and we'll help you find a way to do it. An email that came in, which I wanted to refer to straight away. This is from Tanya. She says, I must say it felt weird dressing up in my cocktail dress last week at that time. Nice to do something different, though. Thank you, guys. Every single one of you for a great show. Grateful to have all of you and your good. Yeah, thank you for your service is what she's saying. Please excuse the earphones in my pic. The family was still sleeping. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy, Tanya. Tanya, thanks for dressing, thanks for dressing up with us.
She looked gorgeous.
Candace says, dear team, it is so lame, but I wanted to thank you for keeping me sane during the lockdown. The panic, the hysteria, the bullshit, and the chaos is too much for most of us. But to an overthinking, doomsday prepping conspiracy theorist like me, this is hell on earth. No matter how hysterical and paranoid I get the next day, I listen to you guys and it all doesn't seem as bad as I was led to believe. I've been an avid listener since the beginning and this lockdown has made me a super fan. Thank you, Candace. Wow, that's nice, Candace. I appreciate that very much. Isn't that nice?
Oh, that's sweet.
Very nice.
Oh. So, Bulelo, you had an interesting suggestion, and maybe now that we're reconfiguring everything in our lives, we should look at school syllabuses. And what I liked about what you said to me very briefly is that what we should do is maybe put divorce law and a driver's license into the school curriculum as subjects in grade 10 to 12 so that people could understand what marriage and driving a car and maybe even owning a gun and that kind of thing are all about. Because these are not practical things that people teach you at school, right?
Well, I just think, you know, we live in such a conservative country that marriage is something that's bound to come up in a South African adult's life. It's not like I'm talking about tech and trying to be a YouTuber. You know, that's kind of something quite, I don't know, off mainstream.
I can tell that you were trying to mind your words there.
Yeah,
what are you trying to say? Say it, Mbulelo. What do
you didn't want to call them lower people again.
let's stick to what I'm saying. Let's stick to what I'm saying. But I just think, you know, it's going to happen. And I heard an insane divorce story this weekend that a friend of mine told me. And I thought, why wasn't this person in a position to make a better decision for herself? And I thought, oh, we've never been taught what to do when a relationship ends. Like, we've never been taught legally, philosophically, psychologically. And now she was trapped in hell. So I don't know why we don't teach people how to get divorced. Like, it's going to happen. And 50% of them are going to end. We know that now. Oh, like, that's not like some secret that like, oh, and nobody gets married to get divorced.
Yeah, I hear you.
But it's happening and it's brutal.
Yeah, so basically if we teach people young what marriage means and what that contract's all about and how it could end in divorce and what divorces are like, because most people only encounter divorces. You know, you kind of hear friends of yours have gone through a divorce, but most people only encounter it when they themselves are going through it.
And
100%. It can be massively traumatic. It can be very financially costly. It can be hard, especially if you've got kids and you then have to work out. Like, let's say you're in your 20s and you get divorced. And now you have children and you have to share custody and you think, well, I'm getting divorced because this didn't work. And for whatever reason, you know, not all marriages work. Very few work. For whatever reason now, I can't have this person in my life anymore. And now I have to have the kid that we both have together in our lives, no matter what. So you can never really totally leave that person behind.
Absolutely.
And I think that this is... Pumi, what do you reckon? Do you reckon Bulelo is out of his mind here, or do you think this is possibly something useful?
Well, although I do think that that's the responsibility of the parent and the family. The it's like saying we should put how to love in the school curriculum.
And we should.
How to be in the school curriculum. I think that, you see, divorces and having gone through one can be brutal. Mm. I have not yet seen one that is not, for lots of different reasons. But all those reasons are about the individuals and how individuals see an end or a beginning, or how they perceive, because this is why it's so brutal in my view, is because a lot of people perceive it as a failure.
Right.
Mm. Right? Mm-hmm. So, and that you cannot how to perceive failure. You can only teach kids how to deal with different instances. You can teach them how to deal with bullies. You can teach them how to deal with a pandemic, as we're doing now. You can teach them how to be themselves and how to honor themselves and honor their feelings and honor and respect themselves and respect other people. But you can't make it a school's responsibility.
Yeah, I'm afraid
that.
Pumi's just destroyed your argument for me, Mbulelo. Maybe other people think you still have a point, but I'm with Pumi. Like, this is the responsibility of families and parents, and you know, your parents have to raise you to know what to expect from a spouse, not your school. A school is a very sterile, clinical, educational institution that doesn't solve all your problems.
And but when we talk about...
As it is, the concept of school is so archaic.
Yeah, exactly.
The curriculum.
Right. I'm sorry, Mbulelo, you're losing ground here. Pumi, keep talking. It's costing him.
No, but it is, right? I mean, schools worked when the industrial age was such that it needed lots of disciplined people who could sit still and follow particular instructions in a particular way for long periods of time. The world doesn't work like that anymore. Look at how we are working, right? And yeah, schools haven't taught children.
And for millions of years before the Industrial Revolution, there were no schools. People just kind of passed on information to their children. And obviously that's partly to blame, but it's partly also to be credited with what civilization is. But Mbulelo, you put a lot of stock in these schools. What if they're run by stupid people or bad people? What if they're infused with horrible ideologies? Do you still want them
And laws change. Divorce laws have changed. From first divorce to today's divorces, it's not one particular thing. Everybody's divorce is different. Everybody's post-divorce circumstance is different. That's why everybody has their own parenting plan, and there's not one prescribed parenting plan.
So I started off thinking, Mbulelo has a nice point here. This is interesting. We should maybe bring this up on the show too. Oh, my God, I wish we hadn't brought this up because it's so dumb.
Wow. Yeah, well, I mean, I think Pumi's speaking to something quite interesting, and everybody is we've kind of reduced education to just produce things so that they can go and make money in the world. Whereas when Aristotle came up with academia, is you should educate the person to be a good person in the world. So forget about
again, I'm going to say to you, who are these people doing the education? Because sometimes they can be foul, horrible beasts who have terrible ideas.
And I agree with you. I think we have a systemic problem there as well. Yeah. So what we have to say is the system is broken, and for us to just say, well, let's keep going. Well,
what do you think? What do you think of homeschooling? Pumi, what do you think of it?
I think it works for some people. Mm. It definitely doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
I, for one, am not the kind of person that likes to deal with a person that's still mouthing the 3x table. As you and I knew this. So I knew this at the onset of Tanego going to school. I was just like, I'm not that parent, and so I have outsourced that kind of stuff. I couldn't deal with the person who can't write his name. What?
Yeah.
But Other people
are patient and sure. Yeah, of course.
And I mean, homeschooling for me, and we had 3 weeks of it. Thank God all of this is happening during our school holiday time. So we don't have a lot of schoolwork that's regimented that we have to do right now. We only had 2 weeks of it. It's horrendous for me. It's horrendous.
Yeah, you've hated it.
And it makes it also makes the relationship Kanego and I have acrimonious.
Yeah.
Because now we're fighting about things we shouldn't be fighting about. I'm frustrated, he's frustrated, and where is just the two of us? It's just the two of us. We cannot afford our relationship to be eroded by mathematical problems.
I hear you. No. This is a good point.
So valid.
Yeah.
Guys, come on.
I wonder how many parents have suddenly realized, like, they always thought somewhere deep inside they had an educator in them, and some of them have just suddenly realized, no, I do not. This is not for me.
No, let me just, because this poor, I know you'll get this more than anyone else here this morning. My niece is in grade 3 and she's currently learning to read with expression.
Oh, yeah.
So she has to read out loud. And so she's been using our dining room table between meals for her work. And all I ever hear during the afternoon is, Tom Sal. Tom sleeps when he. I'm like, So it is every single word broken down by the sound of the letter. I know there are tons of parents out there who are going, okay, yeah, this is not for me.
And also, I think it's a tragic shock for people. You know, we live in, again, a conservative country where most of us are raised in children are really meant to be seen and not heard. It's hard for adults now to accept that children have information now at the tip of their fingers that we've never had access to at their age. So they know more now. They don't need you. And it's very difficult. Pedagogical relationship between teacher and student is rough if you're not trained to tame your ego.
Well, Christine agrees with you, Mbulelo, even if the rest of us don't. She said she disagrees with Pumi. Families are too emotionally connected and invested. Schools are much more structured and if run correctly, it could work. Pumi, it's ironic. This is another message from someone else. I know, but a great gesture from the UAE. The South African flag was put on the Burj Khalifa on Freedom Day. Did you see that? It was projected on there with very bright lights. Beautiful.
Switzerland projected it on the side of a mountain.
On the Matterhorn, yeah. I saw that. Beautiful.
Listen, the world loves South Africans. We just need to learn to love ourselves.
Preach. Folks, I think this is a burning story we haven't got to yet.
What's that?
Are we saying rest in peace to Kim yet?
Kim Jong-un. Now, I don't know, because I'm struggling. I'm sure the whole world's media are struggling to find out whether the guy's alive or dead. Turns out...
His BFF, guys. His BFF,
Dennis Rodman. Apparently, he went in for a fairly routine heart operation and ended up, there was some kind of complication. He might be dead. He might be brain dead. He might be okay. Nobody knows. And of course, North Korea, they just, like any totalitarian regime, they control all the information going in and out. And nobody can figure out what's actually happened here, but he might be dead.
And have you heard that South Africa has not been wrapped into the story?
How?
So North Korea yesterday published a letter that supposedly Kim Jong-un wrote to Cyril Ramaphosa, congratulating him on Freedom Day. And this letter was dated the 27th of April.
That could be fake.
Exactly.
I mean, it could
be. You know,
maybe the sister wrote it.
Well, they say the sister's going to take over, and she looks like a very hardcore human being. I mean, there's a picture of her where she looks very sullen and very angry. And I don't like any of that family. They're a crime family. They're a bunch of hoodlums. And
you have to speak to Kenton about this on Thursday. He's got some very strong opinions.
Oh, really? Oh, really? Okay.
And, you know, you think about it. Kim Jong-un is only 36 years old.
Yeah, but he's fat.
And
he's fat. That's why he had a heart problem. No, seriously.
Yeah, they say it was obesity, the heart issues, and also fatigue that could have. Yeah, that's what they say. What could have brought about the complications?
Too many
sex
slaves that they stole from Japan for him. I mean, come on, do me a favor.
Gareth, you're beautiful as you are. He's going to be on Sports Illustrated soon. Yeah, sure. I don't like what you're doing.
It's body shaming.
Yeah, right. That's it.
Everybody,
I found myself so drawn to the story over the weekend, surprisingly so.
I just want to close up this discussion that we had with Mbulelo. I'm always on Mbulelo's side of the argument, no matter what, says Tobile. So there we go. Someone's on your side.
Wow, not biased at all.
Somebody else said, yeah, Mbulelo, we didn't all go to a fancy school in KZN. Some of us learned sex education by having a banana and putting a condom on it. So there we go. Yeah, you laugh at it. Someone else said, we're adding subjects for schools to teach, Audrey says, why don't we teach people how to fill in a tax form?
Brilliant. I totally agree.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go through the litany of it. I just thought the two most important. I totally agree with that.
All right. And guys, I'm having a laugh listening to you in South Africa. I'm planning to move to SA in May. I've booked containers, shipped my car, and made all arrangements to get here. Now I'm stuck in Japan waiting to see how long it'll take. Imagine a 40-year-old in a suit making those sounds. Teaching English to businessmen in Japan. That's what this guy's been doing.
Oh, right.
Graham. Graham says he's been in a suit and he used to teach English to businessmen.
Sounding out words.
Well, good luck with your move. I mean, that sounds sounds exciting. Brandon,
it's a big one, hey?
Brandon says, I don't know if you spoke about it already. I haven't listened in a long time. Have you chatted about people losing their shit with Trevor Noah and his Jesus comments? Also, Lala Hirayama has been crucified for her colored TikTok video. Folks are uptight and angry during this lockdown. That's from Brandon. You know,
I didn't see Lala's TikTok video.
I saw. So there's a lot of really seething misery out there. And Pumi, you indicated this some weeks ago at the start of lockdown, that all those people who got their kicks by getting out occasionally, drinking on a Friday, you know, they had a pressure valve, a pressure release. And those people do not at the moment. And they are being more irritating than ever because I haven't heard about the Trevor Noah or Lala Hirayama thing, but I did see that Google created a doodle for Freedom Day, which included the Springbok. And people are saying, oh, my God, but the Springbok is an – basically the Springbok animal is an Afrikaner nationalist. And
oh, gosh.
Yeah, and that this must be banned. So Google, one of the biggest companies in the world, were so upset by getting on the wrong side of the woke crowd that they pulled this down and apologized. It's insane.
Wow.
Insane. So I just want to say to those woke people, get fucked, the whole lot of you. And if you don't like Lala Hirayama, don't follow her. If you don't like Trevor Noah, don't watch him. If you don't like the Springbok on Google, use Yahoo. But don't think you can make the world exactly according to your liking. There are others in the world who think that Lala's very entertaining. There are others who love Trevor Noah, and there are people who don't mind the Springbok because it's just a goddamned animal.
You see, but Gareth, that's where the problem lies. The fact that a lot of people who complain or want to, you know, drag people down for what they post or what they say is the fact that they don't have that thought process to say, oh, if I don't like it, then I'll just step away or I'll just use another company. No, they want to drag. They want to see the person suffer.
Yeah, well, I suppose what we've got to do is we've got to start letting companies like Google and people like Lala and the rest of them know that you don't have to apologize to this crowd because they don't see apology as a genuine and sincere desire in you to accommodate them. They see it as weakness and then they keep attacking afterwards. They're not good people. These are not good people.
But this is what I was alluding to earlier about the lack of nuanced conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's so many parts to any one experience. There are so many conversations that can be had that it opens up. There are so many other things besides just the the glaring thing that you're seeing in front of you. So whatever happened with Lala, I mean, sorry, a similar thing happened with Kelly Kumalo. I don't know if you saw any of that.
Where she also, there was a video of her crying that I never got to play on the show as well, but she was basically calling
she
was asking people to pray.
Yeah, and she was having a genuine meltdown.
Yeah.
Genuine meltdown.
And people
in the
attacked
middle of
her.
The night.
To pray about what?
Pick a topic. We are new, Baba Masala. Anyway, you can pray about anything these days.
No, you have to explain it though. Kelly Kumalo posted this selfie video of herself, her eyes absolutely red and tears streaming down her cheeks. She was saying that she felt
ugly cry.
Sure, just bad.
It really was. And on her spirit, you know, on her soul, she felt that it was a message that she got to tell everyone, her followers, to kneel and pray at this very moment.
Well, I mean, you know, she's not stupid to go into the religious business. I've just got Pat Robertson over here sitting next to me at the moment. Pat, what do you think of that?
Well, I've spoken to Kelly, and she's a good human being. She's a good young woman, that, and she is the eyes of the Lord are upon her, and she is not going to get pitchforked in the tits in hell, because that's what happens to bad people. Is you get pitchforked in the tits. That's what it says so in the Bible. I will find the passage and read it to you. Do you want to hear that?
Good.
No, it's okay. Thank you.
People were. It was insane.
So
what did they attack her for?
I mean, again, like if Kelly Kumalo upsets you that much, you have to ask yourself, why don't I just
walk away?
Yeah, exactly. Or do I have to admit that I have some big problem that I'm not willing to admit and that I'm not willing to accommodate in my life, that I'm not going to deal with. And I'm projecting this onto Kelly.
Yo, people were upset. People were just like, Kelly doesn't have a right. All of these things. First, before she tells us to pray, she must tell us what happened to Senzo Meiwa.
Oh, wow.
Oh, Tito, so manja.
It went right there. Other people were going, guys, stop looking at the messenger and listen to the message. You know what happened the last time people didn't listen to the messenger? Look what happened with Noah.
Oh, wow.
Well, I got this. This is another example of this from Kala, who listens to us often and sends us messages. So Kala says, people are losing it, guys. I was cucked out and unfriended by someone I've known for 20 years because I called President Cyril Squirrel. She told me off for being disrespectful to the great man. Before I could respond about him idly sitting by while Jay-Z and the Guptas did what they did, poof, she was gone. Yeah.
Oh, no, guys.
Yeah, people's sense of humor is at an all-time low. They're just completely incapable of hearing any opinion other than their own. And if you
next thing will be insert inverted commas cancelled because we aren't pushing out hashtag Cyril Fridays.
Yeah, well, you listen, if you're a big fan of Cyril's, you go ahead and be a big fan of Cyril's. It doesn't mean everybody else has to. What is this insanity?
Just on the other side of Trevor Noah and public figures receiving this sort of negative feedback, is it like, are they exempt from negative feedback? If you don't want that, don't go into the public world.
No, that's not what we're saying, Bulelo. Stop being so stupid. You're betraying your good education.
Let's hear it.
We're saying that if you don't like it, you don't have to watch these people, but you cannot have them cancelled for everybody else.
Yes. Yeah, no, the cancel culture is mental. Yeah.
So I don't mind. Like, I think Trevor totally understands that he's in the public sphere, and what he says a lot of the time upsets not just his audience in America, but his audience all over the world. I don't think he's dumb. I mean, no. I know this show is not for everybody, right? Mm. And I'm not trying to make it for everybody. If you think that this show is going to tick all the boxes for you, you're stupid, and I'm always going to come short of your expectations.
And I can't really speak to the Trevor Noah thing because I haven't read up on it or seen it. But when it comes to Lala Hirayama, she was recording a video on TikTok. And the premise of TikTok are these short videos where there are preset audio clips that match the video. So you just
By
basically...
the way, I just want to say, don't go on TikTok. First of all, it is probably some kind of Chinese research vehicle. And I know this sounds like conspiracy theory, but it is a Chinese app, and you have no business being on there because they gave you the virus. And I don't think it's an adult application. Like, I don't think it's a good, I don't think it's a sensible place to be. I think TikTok is completely unsecured on both sides. It's the kind of thing where whatever material you put on there is going to belong to somebody else. It's not a sensible thing to do. So, yes, she was on TikTok.
Yeah, so the point that I'm trying to make is it's audio that is already on the site. And Lala just recorded a video of her doing that. So, yes, you can say she was responsible because she actually recorded the video. But why isn't the finger being pointed at TikTok for then allowing?
What did she say? Is it something that's like vicious and mean about colored people?
No, she was just portraying, and what people are now saying is the stereotype of a colored woman.
So that's what
there was like.
I hate to tell you, but like, I grew up with Khatipa Marai jokes. It's like, it's part of.
There we go.
It's part of our sense of humor.
It's humor. It's a stereotype. She didn't say this is like, true, you know, for everyone.
For example, when on Thursday evening, when the president couldn't put his mask on, I put a whole lot of stuff on Instagram, making fun of him because it was funny. And then on the Friday, when he made fun of himself, I put that video up too. And I said, you know what? I like this. This guy's taking himself less seriously. We should all laugh
at yesterday.
Ourselves. Right.
I mean, and yesterday with the scarf. He's trolling us, guys. He's trolling us.
Right. So, you know what? Everybody calm down. It's not necessary to get upset and offended on anyone's behalf, ever. You never have that right. Let's be clear. I'm going to say this again because it's really important. You do not have a right to get upset on someone else's behalf, especially if they're not upset. So if Cyril's not upset that we're ripping him off for doing something stupid on national television, then neither do you have the right to tell everybody else that they're not meant to mock him and they're not allowed to. It's not your place. You don't have that right.
Look, guys, I do think that everybody, like the message that came through, everybody is bloody losing it in a big way. And it's because of a whole lot of different things. But I do want to say that while we're all losing it in our adult selves, we're really not thinking about how hectic it must be for the little people.
Mm.
Right? So Tanego and I obviously hold up here in our, we have a very comfortable space. You know, he can go outside, he can play with the dog. He's, right. There's lots of things that he can do. But it's not even a fraction of what he's used to. Can you imagine what it must be for him, right? He's used to going to playing with his friends and running around fields, riding his bicycle, all of those things. And there are little people all over the world, guys, that are just, that don't, if we're irritated by our parents watching the news all the time, they are
beside themselves.
They don't even know how to process what's happening to them. And we're not even paying attention to them. I don't think we're paying enough attention
to
allowing them to work through their anxieties and their feelings now too, and all of the stuff that they have had ripped away from them.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I have, you know, my nephews are not far from here. They're just up the road with my brother and sister-in-law. And They're happy kids, and you can see that they're enjoying spending a bit of time with their parents. But, you know, my brother's working from home, and so is my sister-in-law. So they've got things to do when they're not busy teaching the kids, feeding the kids, playing with the kids, doing all the things that, as you know, Pumi, you have to do. But you can see they also know that there's something going on. And you've got to explain it to them. These kids aren't going to work it out on their own.
And as people start dying closer to us as well, it's a whole other thing that, you know, unfortunately, Mbulelo, we're not going to be able to put this one in the school curriculum.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no. Academia did it 2000 years ago. Part of philosophy is teaching, especially young people, in the Socratic notion of why boarding school was invented, was you should extract the youth from the society to go and educate them as a person away from the corrupt society. Because
So
death is actually a big part of education from a young age, actually, if we do it properly.
Well, I don't want to go down
we
that
We don't
path.
Do it no. properly.
Yeah, we don't do it properly. I mean,
no, we do not. We certainly do not.
That's my point.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with
I
you.
I would love for Mbulelo, for you to just have a kid as a social experiment.
No, oh, no.
You'd be the most terrible person.
Oh. At this point, I'm even willing to fork it financially. Yeah, but
one
I just
is
want
bad
to
enough.
See.
So, Mbulelo, a question for you. This is something from Mbulelo now. This is from Sergio. Sergio says, ask Mbulelo how many of the governing body at his alma mater would accept divorce as a subject. Zero.
yeah, there's still a chapel there. Trust
and
me.
And then somebody said that the Lala Hirayama video was hilarious. This coming from a colored person. I'll send the link. Yeah, you see, I'm so pleased that that we're not all the same. And I don't want this uniformity of what should be funny and what isn't and what is acceptable. Here's the Lala clip in case you want to hear it. So listen to this. So basically, she's just doing a whole lot of lines. These are obviously two real colored women who recorded the original audio, as Sia explained. And then she's just acting it out. So there's nothing wrong with that. I don't see how this is a problem. It's not the funniest thing I've ever seen. But apparently Piers Morgan is also upset with the Beckhams. What's this about?
Ooh, Piers is having his own meltdown, guys.
Well, I never thought I'd live to see the day when I actually agree with Piers Morgan on this one. So he actually went on a bit of a rant around the Beckhams and particularly Victoria Beckham, because in the UK right now, a big thing that is going on is the furloughing a lot of people. You know, this is the money that comes from the government to help businesses that are taking, you know, 3 months off and have been affected by the lockdown to sustain some salaries. Victoria Beckham and her fashion line have applied for this. And I think, yes, as much as the structures are there and it's correct on paper, Victoria Beckham, of all people, who has a fortune of £335 million, and also whose fashion line hasn't been profitable for years now, I don't think she should actually be allowed to get this money.
I'm with Piers on this one. How about you?
Yeah. The government will now pay 80% of their employees' salaries. These are 30 of her workers. And then she and the company will only fork out the remaining 20%.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Like, your fashion line is not at all essential to humanity's survival. I'm really sorry.
Except which the money is essential for the survival of her employees.
Yeah, but they, you know what? Frankly, if you went to work for Victoria Beckham's fashion line, you kind of knew that there was a 50-50 chance that you'd ever...
Wow.
Well, I just think, why doesn't she sacrifice, not even, I'm not, you know, going after all of her side money. Why doesn't she sacrifice her salary from the company itself?
No, let the government pay her. You see, it's amazing how, like, some people do not mind taking government money.
This is wrong.
It's like some people will live in their parents' house until they're 40. I don't understand it. I get that it's the easy way. I mean, like, there's no, if you could have someone do your washing, cook you a meal well into your 40s, and you're okay with that, that's great. I mean, it's on you. But it's no different. This idea of taking government money is exactly the same as living with your parents into your 40s. It's just, to me, seems like you're just never growing up. You're just never going into adulthood.
There has to be a line we have to draw in this instance, because I feel like we're still going to see several other cases, and even particularly here in South Africa with so many funds being available and, you know, this one can get but not this one. I feel like people are going to naturally take advantage of situations like this. But when it is, maybe it's a hierarchy thing, a priority of what companies first, I know that's going to make a mess of things. But, you know, Victoria Beckham, she launched this company back in 2008. And it hasn't made a profit since.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Like, it's time. Call it quits. And at least all the losses up to now were hers. But back now, in, now the taxpayer has to take on that loss? No, sorry, it's not.
Yeah, back in 2018, the company suffered £12.3 million loss. The year before that, 2017, it suffered a £10.3 million loss. And at least in 2017, that was the year David just thought, oh yeah, let me pay that amount. So
yeah, this is rich people just living out their fantasies. Obviously, you're not that good at fashion, honey. Otherwise, you would have sold more dresses.
Then it doesn't help the fact that she did an interview a couple of weeks ago where she admitted she has a collection of handbags and purses that amount to more than £1 million.
Yeah, you see, if you're going to admit that in the same space of time as you're asking for money, it's not going to work.
Yeah, that's coming back to bite her in the behind.
I'm with Piers. Even if he is going into meltdown, this is something worth melting down about. Like, if you're a British taxpayer, you don't want to fund Victoria Beckham's ego trip. That's not on. That sounds to me like a very bad idea. You know, it's like these people who...
That's actually the word he used as well.
Well, I didn't know that. There we go. So we're in complete agreement then. But, you know, it's like these people who want to support a... You know, there's some abstract play that's on at some funny little theater around the corner. And it's about someone who shouts at a blank wall and then throws their own excrement at it. The government should never pay for that. Ever. That kind of, as much as it's you expressing your artistic ability, you should do that at your own cost. And if no one pays for tickets to come and watch you do that, you've got to stop doing it. You got to stop doing it. It's just not good for you or for society.
The poop monologues.
Yeah. There are people who do this stuff, Sia. I mean, like, there are artists who, you know, they'll get a canvas and then they'll roll naked on the canvas and they'll put blue and red and black and green, and they'll tell you it's all symbolic, and they'll roll on the canvas. It's performance.
Yoko Ono will fund that. The conceptual stuff.
But if you do that stuff, no one else is. There should be nobody on earth who pays for that except you. I get that it's your expression, but if it's your expression, it's also going to be for your cost. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, where do we draw the line? Do we kick Elizabeth and her bunch out of Buckingham Palace? I mean, they've done a great job for thousands of years.
Have they?
Taking the taxpayers' money. Yeah, they certainly have.
Yeah, but they own the country. You know that she owns the country, right? You know she,
I do know this, yeah, which is ludicrous to me. But
she owns every scrap of land. Anyway, so all right, we've got to call this fun party of ours to quits for this morning because we've got Blind History Season 3, Episode 7 coming up now. It's about the Persian Empire. Maybe Mbulela will find them a little more acceptable than the British Empire. The Persian Empire was probably the greatest empire of the ancient world up to Rome because Persia was a land of incredible diversity, many multiple languages, cultures that were infused into this one great empire, this one great kingdom. They were the first proper imperialists, and they did it in an indistinguishable manner. I mean, it was just absolutely unbelievable what they achieved. Some great kings there, Cyrus, Darius, Xerxes. These are the names that are etched into history, deeply etched in cuneiform into history. And I love
also Gareth.
Yeah, boy.
The Persian Empire gave us Shiraz.
Yes, that's
I know
correct.
Many people don't that's have correct. Shiraz in their in their cabinets right now, but Shiraz Persian
wine,
Empire, guys.
That's right, from the Shiraz region of Persia. And, you know, many Iranians don't like to refer to themselves as Iranians today. They call themselves Persians. And I found out, to my great satisfaction, that when I did that DNA test, you know, where you find out what your ancestry is?
Mm-hmm.
I found out, Pumi, I'm 3% Persian, so I'm very proud of that.
Aha!
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah, kind of cool. So there we go. Lots of Persian history coming up for you in Blind History Season 3, Episode 7, next on cliffcentral.com. We also got that interview I promised you with Mandy Wiener coming up after that. So stick around. Mandy Wiener, terrific journalist who has lots to say about the lockdown. And perhaps you will find some interesting information in there that you did not know. Mandy, who's not afraid to sit at a lunch table with some of the worst gangsters in the country. She is
the underbelly of the country, really.
Damn right. And she knows everything about the operations of those nefarious characters. She's writing another book, and we found out what life for her is under lockdown. And you can find out next on cliffcentral.com. All of that and more on the way. Have an awesome Tuesday, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock, bright and early. In central Iran, at the foot of a low hill overlooking a seemingly endless plain, stand a few broken ruins, reaching impossibly high. A few of them display the stern, proud faces of bulls and eagles, battered by 2,300 years of history. In the great Apadana that once stood there, Darius, King of Kings, would sit and preside over a parade of nations that came to honor him. Sumerians, Babylonians, Assyrians, Egyptians, Greeks, Medes, Canaanites, Indians, and Bactrians. This was the most diverse, multicultural empire of the ancient world. This was Persia. Blind History, Season 3, and we've incorporated into one episode a number of powerful men 2,500 years ago, roughly, who began an empire called the Achaemenid, or the Persian Empire. It was founded by Cyrus the Great, who we'll get to in a minute, ranging in its greatest extent from the Balkans, Yugoslavia, you know, modern Croatia would have been the furthest west that it went, all the way to the Indus Valley in the east, which is in the border between India and Pakistan. It was larger than any previous empire in history. It spanned 5.5 million square kilometers, incorporated people of different origins and faiths, notable for its successful model of a centralized bureaucratic administration, for building roads and infrastructure, a postal system which we still use today, and an official language across all the territories, despite other languages being part of all of its day-to-day stuff. The development of civil services, a large professional army, the empire's successes inspired similar systems in empires like Greece and Rome and all the others that have come since. It's amazing. The Persian Empire is our focus for today, and we'll talk about King Cyrus. We'll talk about Darius the First, sometimes called Darius. The actual way you pronounce Cyrus is Kirush in Persian. And from that also, they say, comes Caesar. Anthony Medera and I have been researching, poring over work. We've been reading tons about Persia so we can transmit this useful information to you, and he's here. So what do we think of the Persians?
Incredible. I didn't know a lot about them.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about Alexander the Great, now I know why he went that route.
And also why Alexander the Great's regarded as so great, because if he'd conquered some rubbishy little empire, nobody would have cared.
Mm.
And a lot of people date the end of the Persian Empire to 330 BC, when he defeated Darius III at the Battle of Gaugamela. But the reality is that Alexander was the last Persian king.
That's right.
He incorporated everything that was great about Persia into the way that he ruled for those succeeding years, few as they may have been. So I say that the end of the Persian Empire is 323 BC.
Yeah, he brought the prostrating, which is what they used to do, and he brought that into his...
Prostrating?
Yes.
But like where you go down...
What is it? Yes.
Where you prostrate yourself before
the
king.
Is it prostrate or prostrate?
I don't know, but it sounds bloody horrible, whatever it is. So, this is where you had to make obeisance to the king, right?
Correct. And his fellow Macedonians hated it. Why do we need... Because they used to slap each other on the backs. They almost had a brotherly type of way. Whereas the Persians, well, no.
No, the Persians were... Now, they were a tremendously sophisticated, very culturally aware, sensitive and gentle civilization, despite their very military side as well. I think most of the inheritance we have from ancient Persia is of manners and of the way we eat and the way we present gifts and even the way we dress. I mean, the Persians were basically like the most cultured of all the people of the ancient world. You know, they wore these elaborate crowns and footwear. And I mean, most of the rest of the ancient world was pretty barbaric. And the Persians had a way, but they had channels carved into rock that flowed through the gardens of their palaces. And this is in what is today Iran, you know, kind of dusty and maybe a little bit of grass. But in between this, they would dig these channels and they'd line them with stone. And these would feed water into these gardens, which ultimately made these places look like lush forests.
Like oases.
Yeah. Cyrus the Great, who was the first Persian king, the founder of the Persian Empire, is buried in the capital of his then empire. It's called Pisargadae, which is in Iran. It's in the mountains in the south of Iran. And it's really quite extraordinary that they've managed to keep any of it for, you know, 2,500 years. You'd expect most of it to have disappeared. But his tomb is over there, and it's a little house. It's basically got a slanted roof. It's up on three steps, and it's got a little entrance for, I don't know how long, it must have been about 500 or 600 years his body lay undisturbed there. I mean, that's just amazing.
It's incredible. And if we look at the beginning, they were nomadic. And even during the time of Cyrus and Darius the Great and Xerxes, they still were semi-nomadic. So they did move around a lot. In summer, they would go up into the hills. Mm. And in winter, when it was colder, they would go down into the plains. So they moved around a lot. So that's why they had different headquarters or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, they'd move their capital as they moved.
And sheep, they were basically tending sheep and cattle, and that's where it started in the beginning.
They made an early alliance with the Medes, so the place called Media, which is sort of between the southern shores of the Caspian Sea and what we'd call modern-day Iran, was where the Medes used to live, and the Persians and the Medes made an early alliance, and from there they expanded outward into places like Bactria and Sogdiana and Canaan and Babylonia. Assyria.
Yes. You know? So the whole of Mesopotamia, then Egypt, and then the Indus Valley, three critical areas.
And what was so interesting about Cyrus is that he's regarded as being the first real multiculturalist. Now, he was emperor, king of this vast Persian territory. And in it, they had all these different tribes that spoke all these different languages, had all their own cultural and religious beliefs. And it's widely believed, like in the ancient world, there weren't a lot of people who were very tolerant. You know, if you weren't like me, I killed you. Mm. And Cyrus was sort of the first guy to come along and say, no, actually, it's perfectly acceptable for us all to share the space, to be equal in the state, to all practice our own different religions, and nobody has to fight with each other. I'm your king. I'll make the decisions. Mm. You guys just worry about getting along and keep the economy going. And they built roads, and he built his palaces, which they called apadanas. And through the course of history, we're not going to go into huge detail around any of these people in particular, but you might have stories about particularly Darius the First. Some people say Darius, but Darius the First, Darius the Third, Xerxes, Artaxerxes. These are the great Persian kings. And Cyrus was famous for having united the kingdom, really, pushed it to its military extent as far as possible, and having instituted a sense of multiculturalism and peace in that part of the world.
So if we look at Cyrus and his grandfather, Astyages, if that's the correct way of pronouncing it, he had a dream, and this is part legend, part true. He had a dream that his daughter was bleeding from her uterus, and that scared him, and he went to an interpreter. They said, now look, your daughter's child will end up taking over from you. So what he did was, when the daughter's child was born, she was married to a prince, Prince Cambyses the First, and they took control of the baby and told his closest general to have the baby murdered.
Wow. Yeah. That would have been Cyrus.
Cyrus. The general couldn't do that. And so he gave it to a shepherd. So if we look at that type of story, even related to the story of Jesus.
And even the story of Moses and Moses, you know, being found in the reeds.
Yeah. So then what happened, at 10 years old, he showed incredible qualities, and Astyages actually found out, no, there's something wrong here. You didn't kill him. So he invited his general to a big banquet, and his food was on a different plate. He had a different meal to everybody else, but it tasted and looked good. And he said, you know what you've just eaten? You've just eaten your son. And that's in payback to what you've done with Cyrus.
You know, the system of government that they had was what they called satraps. They used to have these governors in different provinces, and largely the word governor is descended from satrap. That was an old Persian word. There are a number of different languages, which we've already discussed, but old Persian, which they called Iranian, which is where the name of Iran comes from now, was the main language. And then they would usually print everything in three. So they'd say it in Persian, then they'd say it in, for example, Aramaic, or in Medean. Mm. And then you'd have three translations. Then this is how they figured out in the 1800s when they discovered places like Persepolis. They rediscovered them. They figured out how to read cuneiform writing because you had three languages saying the same thing. And they actually found two plates, one of gold and one of silver, buried in the foundations of Persepolis later on. We'll get to that when we get to Darius, because he was the guy who founded that
city. Yeah, that's right, that city. But Cyrus then, when he came to power, he went against his maternal grandfather and basically started building his empire. And Astyages straight away knew most of his army then went across to Cyrus. So obviously Cyrus was dynamic and had great pulling power. People wanted to be with him. So it wasn't always force that made him grow his empire. Often it was
charisma.
Yeah, it was charisma, and there was a lot of that rather than force.
He seems to have been a very tolerant guy, because we are talking about, you know, 500 BC here.
Mm.
And Cyrus is also well documented in an archaeological item called the Cyrus Cylinder, which I think the British Museum has. And the Cyrus Cylinder, you roll it out on a piece of clay, and then it prints out basically on soft clay what is written on the cylinder. It's a clever way of printing, you know, before the press was invented. And it's like the first ever declaration of human rights, saying that everybody has equality before the law. And these were tremendous concepts for people 500 years before Christ.
Yeah, I mean, life was very cheap then, you know, so it's amazing that they had that. Look, he could be brutal when he needed to be.
Yeah.
But in general, you're 100% right. He was very open to his different satraps practicing different religions.
Yeah.
He embraced it when he went to Egypt. He embraced it. Importantly, when he conquered, let's say, but he didn't actually, they just went across to him, Babylonia. He released all the Jews and they went back to Jerusalem, and he assisted in rebuilding, you know,
the Second Temple.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cyrus is only one of a few foreign rulers described in positive terms in the Old Testament. And he was actually regarded very highly throughout the ancient world from that point on. He also had, I suppose, he had the job of instituting a state religion. So if you didn't have your own little religion, which he'd let you practice, there was Ahura Mazda, who was the god of the Persians.
Hmm.
He was this winged god who had like a spaceship, essentially. And they worshipped the fire that he left. And all over modern Iran, you can find these platforms that were built, where the priest would stand on one of the platforms and on another would be the fire itself. And they would keep these fires going. They'd only put them out when that king died, and then the new king would come and light the new fire. So the idea of an eternal flame comes from that.
And also the fact that it was one god.
I think maybe the monotheists can claim that the first monotheism was Judaism. And perhaps that predates Persia in some way. But it developed on its own. The idea of Zoroastra or Zarathustra, and that's become a religion, which is still practiced, by the way, in Iran today. There are Zoroastrians in Iran.
Really?
Yeah, that still practice that religion.
And that
now
was Darius the First, really.
Correct. Yeah. Well, talk about Darius, because, you know, Cyrus's tomb is still there. You can go and visit it. It's one of the proudest Iranian relics. And when I say Iran, I'm careful not to include some of the attributes of modern Iran, because Persia is a very different place, and a lot of Iranians refuse to be called anything but Persian, and some are completely supportive of the idea of Iran. But Cyrus's tomb is there. You can go and visit it today. There was apparently an inscription on it that read something like, you know, don't begrudge me this little tomb. And it might have been the inspiration for that Ozymandias quote, which we gave in Ramesses II. Because he had this tiny, humble little tomb.
Mm.
It wasn't anything fancy.
I think he was an incredible leader. I mean, what I've read of him and about him, it's incredible what he achieved. He had two sons.
Another Cambyses.
Cambyses died reasonably early, and that's where there was a void, and the brother took over.
Bardia,
that's it.
About.
But he didn't last actually very long. He was murdered by Cambyses,
mm.
but also the story goes that Darius murdered him.
Darius was the successor then, Darius the Great.
Darius the Great, but Darius wasn't linked to Cyrus.
No.
His dad, Hystaspes, he was a provincial governor in Parthia. And Darius was his son, but he became part of the royal
Well, he
court.
Claims that they all come from, you know, before that Achaemenes, who's the founder of the dynasty, which is like the great-great-grandfather. But to get into Darius, let's just talk about him for a little bit. This guy organized things like very few people. Once he had managed to get rid of this Bardia, he set up the capital in Persepolis, where he built this enormous palace. It was in the middle of nowhere, really. They still ruled from Susa a lot of the time, but they had a famous royal road that went all the way from Susa to Sidon, which is in Lebanon, modern-day Lebanon. And they managed under Darius I to conquer an even greater extent of what was the territory that Cyrus had already managed to conquer.
You concentrate very much on the Danube and cross the Danube deeper into Europe.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And he became pharaoh of Egypt because he conquered the weak last dynasties of Egypt.
Correct, yeah.
So these guys were emperors of the world.
And all the way to India, further than Cyrus went. But what was incredible about him was also his administration. He started working out weightage, coins, all of these things.
That's right.
I mean, that's 2,500 years ago.
Well, what's amazing about him too is that we mostly know about him in Western history because the Greeks gave Western history over to their descendants. And the Greeks like to portray the Persians as being these tyrants and these autocrats and these really uncompromising, militant, tyrannical rulers. The fact is that someone like Darius was actually a very tolerant leader, just like Cyrus before him. There is, however, the Battle of Marathon, which is well known to us because of Greek history. And the Battle of Marathon is only relevant to us because to Darius it was probably nothing. I mean, he had this massive empire and the Greeks were like a flea on a, you know, on a bear's nose. But essentially this guy lost the Battle of Marathon because of that famous run of Pheidippides.
Correct. And that's what you call Marathon.
Who warned the Greeks that the Persians were approaching.
Yeah, so in Marathon, they were pushed off the beach, the Persians. But they'd already come across, they'd already been quite successful to the point of Marathon. So the Marathon was important in that that was the peak of the Persian Empire.
Yeah.
Because they had already the Ion Peninsula, so they had quite a lot of control coming south into Greece, the Persians. And so they wanted Greece, they wanted the Greek Peninsula, and that was quite a big failure for Darius, and it hit him hard. And you can definitely see in his son that burning ambition to get retribution later on for what happened. And Darius was, well, he was going to go back. But then he had problems in Egypt, and then he died.
And when he died, it was Xerxes' turn.
Correct.
And Xerxes is also portrayed in modern representations like that movie 300 as being this monstrous guy who, you know, who's almost like semi-demonic and who controlled this army of millions. And essentially, he was a very powerful leader at the time. He completely eclipsed the power of any Greek army. But he wasn't demonic. He was trying to rule Persia the best way he could.
Correct.
And he was a brave man too, also pushing the limits, trying to administer an ever-increasing territory, running things really from a very centralized system.
And completing a lot of the projects because Darius died quite suddenly.
Usually you get a good king and then their success is usually terrible. In this case, Xerxes was complementary to the reign of Darius.
And Cambyses was complementary to Cyrus. So in essence, you had a very strong 200 years.
Yeah.
It's what they're talking about until Alexander the Great. You know, in general, they ruled quite well. But there's a big famous story around Xerxes' take on Greece. And he did destroy Athens. And he did destroy the Spartans. But over 5 days, he watched how many of his soldiers were murdered by the Spartans. And a small group of Spartans. It's been famous. Movies been made about it, the Battle of Thermopylae. And it took him 5 days to destroy them. Nobody ran away. They died to the man.
He was a pretty good administrator too and a good general. But he was also quite humble compared to his predecessors because they used to call themselves King of Kings. And he actually abandoned that title. And he also abandoned the title of King of Babylonia and called himself just the King of the Persians and the Medes, even though he ruled over it really at its territorial apex. And those battles that he won, Thermopylae is the well-known one that you've just mentioned.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, he did build a bridge of boats over the Hellespont.
100% right.
That they took everything, including elephants, over.
Yeah. So they first built the bridge with the boats. I think it would have been excess 200 boats. Then massive wind came up and just destroyed everything. But he stayed there, and then they rebuilt it. And 2 weeks later, they crossed the Hellespont. And it's famous because Alexander the Great, it was all driven into his psyche. That was why he had to cross the Hellespont. He knew about Xerxes and what he did. All of these things drove Alexander. The Battle of Thermopylae, all of those things, Philip and Philip's predecessors from Macedonia, they drummed into them, but they just weren't strong enough yet.
There are historians who've said that if things had gone differently, either at the battles of Marathon and Thermopylae, most famously, or at any other stage where the Persians and the Greeks had come into contest, we might not have had Western civilization the way that we know it. And
quite
things
possibly
might even have been better, not necessarily worse. He was ultimately assassinated by his own royal bodyguard, Artabanus. And then from there on, it really descended.
Mm.
You didn't have the same kind of power. Administratively, it fell down. Satraps rebelled. The territory was much reduced. There were places like Greece that were on the rise. They had endless trouble in Lydia and other parts of the kingdom. And it ends with Darius III, who went to fight Alexander, realized he was losing the battle at Gaugamela, fled away in his chariot, and he was eventually murdered by his own people. And Alexander was so upset that he ordered a royal funeral for Darius, married his daughter, and had him treated like his own father, essentially, in death. And Alexander did become King of Kings. Unfortunately, he also ruined Persepolis, because while they were staying in Persepolis, which was this magnificent palace that Darius the First had built, Alexander and his men got drunk, and they fell asleep, and someone set fire to something. And when they woke up the next morning, the whole place had burnt down around them.
And he regretted that, huh?
Hugely. And it stayed that way for 2,000 years until they dug it out of the desert sands in Iran.
And you know that nobody really knew about Persepolis. Only in the spring they used to go there. The rest of the world didn't know about it. And the Greeks didn't know about it. And Alexander, he was absolutely in awe when I read the time that he actually came to the city that he didn't know anything about. And he just couldn't believe it.
Well, that's the story of the Persians. I found out when I did one of those genetic tests, I've got 3% Persian in me.
Well, that's interesting.
Who knew?
Blind History is brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. The full series is available on the cliffcentral.com website and app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Next on Blind History, Louis XIV, King of France.
Xerxes was the son of Darius I and Atossa, which is an interesting name.
That was his mom?
That was, yes.
His mom was called Atossa?
Atossa. Xerxes' mom was called Atossa. And she was actually the daughter of Cyrus.
Not the great.
Yes. And you know, Darius was just an usurper. His father and his grandfather were still alive.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't a proper succession.
He didn't follow the rules.
No, he didn't follow the rules.
Thanks for listening to CliffCentral.com. Podcasts of all our shows are always available on the website, the Cliff Central app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.